On the call today, we have a guest. Our guest is Dan Miller, who's written a brand new book called Wisdom Meets Passion: When Generations Collide and When Generations Collaborate. So we're looking forward to a lively conversation, a lively call today, a lively discussion. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to our VP of Programs and our hostess today, Mary Fink. Mary?
Thanks, Joe. We're really excited to have Dan with us. The book is literally hot off the press, and he is just starting his tour and his conferences and his talks about the book. So we're glad to have you here at the very beginning of this process for you, Dan. Welcome.
Thank you.
We generally have a format of asking some questions and then having you answer or Joe answer, and I'll typically pitch it to one or the other of you, and then if you've got something to add, feel free to jump in anytime.
All right.
The first question that I have is, what does leadership look like from a 35-year-old? There are lots of entrepreneurs today, and we have a lot of people that are in their early 30s who are CEOs and strong leaders, and what does their leadership look like? And how is it different and how is it similar to that of someone, say, 45, 55, or even older than that?
Yeah, there are some exciting things that are happening as we look at these changes. And the generations certainly do approach leadership differently. The baby boomers, you know, my generation, we want to get the job done. We look for quantifiable results, get the job done. You know, we don't expect people to have pats on the back a whole lot. Let's just do what we're here to do. Whereas the younger generation is much different. They're much more relational. They're much more committed to causes than they are just accomplishing. Some of them aren't, and this is hard for my generation to understand sometimes because they aren't motivated by the same things. Now, I'm speaking in generalities, obviously, here, but in general, they don't respond as much to, you know, wanting a big house and a Mercedes in the driveway. They'd rather feel like they're part of something. So if they're in a leadership position, that's going to be reflected. They include people. We see open office spaces, no cubicle walls anymore. I mean, all the hot companies, Google, Yahoo, Facebook, and all that, they're sitting around, you know, on beach balls together, but nobody really has an office, including the CEO oftentimes. So there's that sense of being included in something that's very, very important in that generation.
There's also that feeling of it's not about the number of hours that you put in. It's about the results that you can produce. And so we have a saying that we talk about, don't confuse activity with accomplishment.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah. Boomers think, you know, if I'm here from 7 in the morning till 6 at night, and somebody else is waltzing in at a later time and leaving earlier, they must not be doing the same work that I'm doing.
You know, in many ways, that's a healthy transition because – boomers have confused activity with accomplishment. I talk to salespeople all the time, and I tell them, you know, don't tell me you worked 60 hours last week. Show me what you produced. So in that way, it is healthy to just focus on what is being accomplished. And I like the informality of the workplace today. The younger generation, the Gen Xs and the millennials, really bring that in where they don't want to be constrained by anything, certainly not a clock that says 8 o'clock in the morning when they may have been talking great innovative ideas with some friends of theirs until 1 o'clock in the morning.
Exactly. There's a blurring of personal and work. In fact, it's just life.
It is, which is very good. I mean, James Mishner, the great writer, talked about that. You know, the master in the art of living can't make any distinction between his work and his play. And I like that in what we're seeing in this generation. It's not as much, well, I have to go off to the salt mines, you know, it's just something I have to do, and then I go home and integrate into my other life. No, it's living from start to finish.
Right.
If they're involved in something that's meaningful, there's no separation from their personal life and their work life.
So we can learn something.
We can and learn a lot.
Absolutely.
In writing this new book with my son, who's 34, my goodness, it was an amazing experience for me. Of course, seeing where he's come from as a little boy is one thing, but to understand more his generation and how they want to be world changers. They want to do something significant. It's not just about what your financial portfolio looks like. It's what are we doing to make the world a better place?
A better place. Absolutely. For boomers, wisdom was a guiding force. In other words, experience was really important, and that was what solved problems. If I've done it before, I know how to do it when it comes up again. For Gen Xers and millennials, passion really drives them. What means a lot to me? What is a significant social cause that I can contribute to? And information solves problems. I don't have to have done it. I just need to know where to find out the information. Say a little bit about how those two very different perspectives can come together.
We almost have to try to define what wisdom is, because we assume that the younger generation now has passion, and then some people assume that there's kind of a linear progression, so that ultimately the passion diminishes and it turns into wisdom. That really is a pretty unhealthy way of looking at it. We want wisdom and passion at any place on the age continuum. So it's not either or, it's both at either position. What the boomers have, though, sometimes assumed is that wisdom is a direct correlation to knowledge. We have access to unbelievable amounts of knowledge. But access to knowledge, or knowledge in and of itself, even advanced degrees, doesn't necessarily equate to wisdom. Wisdom, you have to be involved in the game of life for which wisdom to show up. So passion, they're almost blended together, because you don't discover passion by just sitting on a stump somewhere, going out in the middle of a field and folding your hands. Passion is discovered as you're involved in something. So the idea that the younger generations tend to go from job to job and career to career, it seems, I tell them, don't negate the value of the journey, because it's in that you really do discover your deepest talents and your strongest passions. Mm-hmm. But then it's in developing those passions that you discover that you have wisdom show up as a process of expressing your passion in a healthy way. So they come together, and it's sad to see somebody who has only one,
right,
no matter where they are age-wise.
Right. Joe, I think you're a great example of a great mix of passion and wisdom. And your experience, your tenure as a great leader, I think probably even deepened your passion for the work. Would you say that's right?
I would say that's very correct. The more engaged you are, the more passionate you tend to become about things. And you were talking earlier about inclusion. When we're running Tractor Supply, still today, I mean, Tractor Supply is a very inclusive company, and you're talking about younger people and being included at the store level, where the majority of employees are fairly young. They were included, and we shared every profit and loss statement, every sales report, and interestingly, it was a monthly sales bonus for everybody in the store, and everybody worked together to get that. They were all included, because when the store made the sales plan, everybody made a bonus, and therefore you have this inclusive role in this team building situation. And if I'm on a team and I'm out goofing off somewhere, the rest of you are all going to get on my case because it's hurting our sales efforts in the store. So
right.
And by having a singular goal, which is sales, and everybody being measured by it and seeing what the results are every day, you get people talking about it, and people develop a passion. They want to make the sales plan. They want to make the sales plan because they know the rewards are there, both emotionally and financially.
Right, and I would also say that Tractor has a great track record for being involved in the community that it's in, and I know that's another thing that millennials and Xers are really that's really important to them. So, can you say a little bit about that, about your involvement? I know you chose things that had some link to what your business was, but you do a lot in the communities that you're in.
A few thoughts there. Strategically, we empower our store managers to do whatever makes sense in the community. And in some communities, it's the chamber. In some communities, it's the baseball team. You know, all sorts of different things. They have a limited budget and amount of time they can devote to that. But as a company, we decided to focus our efforts on a few key things. I want to talk about one of them, which is the FFA. It used to be called the Future Farmers of America, but it's a young people's organization. And we just did everything we possibly could to raise huge amounts of money to support the FFA. We're very proud of what we did there. We're very engaged in it in terms of our time. But it was something that was helping youth in our communities, who are typically our customers, are very close to our customers. So it tied very closely to what we did. Everybody got a great sense of pride out of helping young people in our communities.
Great.
You know, the kind of things that Joe and Tractor Supply were doing were, in some ways, I think, ahead of their time almost, because it addresses so much of what the millennials and Gen Xers expect in today's workplace, that sense of being part of something that goes beyond themselves. Being part of a cause is more important than a plaque on the wall or perhaps even a financial bonus. Being involved, people will commit to something to the degree that they've been allowed to participate in it or discuss it.
Right. Go ahead, Joe.
Very, you know, it's very interesting you say that. One of the tenets that we talked about regularly at Tractor Supply is being a no-secrets company, and we talk about that in our leadership programs at the Institute, too. When you're a leader, there's no upside to keeping secrets from anybody, particularly the young folks, and the more you share with people, the more they're going to jump on the bandwagon and help us all achieve the goal that we're aiming towards. So I would challenge everybody in a leadership role everywhere to take on the mantra of, I'm going to be a no-secrets leader. And the more you share, the more people participate, the more they feel like they're part of the team.
Exactly. And that sort of leads to the next question, and that is about this whole concept of having to pay your dues. If we are indeed blurring the lines between work and home and its life, and we have available at our fingertips just about any information that we need, then that whole paying your dues thing becomes less relevant.
It certainly does. And we've seen that, much to the angst of many of the baby boomers, who think that just because they have been here another year, they deserve an increase. And today's workplace, that's not a realistic business model, and it really is not. People ought to be rewarded based on their contribution. So we're seeing a leveling of the playing field where somebody can come in brand new and young and make a magnificent contribution and be rewarded for that, and rightfully so. And somebody who's been there 21 years now instead of 20 is begrudging the fact that they didn't get a raise this year. So in that way, I think it's healthy for everybody, but it's an adjustment for everybody as well. Now, there are certainly those in the younger generation who expect to be rewarded without producing as well. So we need to address that. That's unrealistic.
Right.
I mean, we know that a lot of these kids coming into the workplace today have an unrealistic sense of entitlement. They've been spoiled all their life. You know, they got a new BMW for their 16th birthday, and on it goes.
You didn't get that?
I did not. Oh, my gosh. Maybe I got to drive the tractor an extra lap around the hayfield, and that's about it for my 16th birthday. But it made me appreciate when I hand-built a car from the ground up, a 1931 Ford Roadster that was envy of everybody after I worked on it for 2 years. That's another story. But that there is an unrealistic sense of entitlement, certainly, and I think it's a good lesson for kids to be confronted with the reality of the workplace and to have that start early. Now, growing up on a farm, we had a lot of work experience, you know, a little mechanical, a little plumbing, a little electrical, and all those things. And I cringe today when kids are coming into the workplace 22 years old with a fresh college degree, and they've never really worked in any kind of environment. And I think, oh, my gosh, it's going to take them years to catch up with just having some realistic work ethic. Mm-hmm. So we have to be patient mm-hmm. with those as well. And I know that a lot of them are disappointed when they discover the realities of the workplace. Nobody really wants them because they don't have marketable skills. Companies do look for marketable skills, not just age and willingness and availability and degrees behind your name, marketable skills. And I, as a life coach, I'm always encouraging people to identify what are your areas of competence, what are your marketable skills, not just what is your history. Don't rest on that. You have to prove you can make a contribution.
Right. And I think it's not enough just to say to someone, I heard a story not long ago of someone who had, a new graduate who had applied for a manager's job, and they were quickly told that, you know, you don't have any management knowledge, much less experience, and it's too early for you to even look at this job. And he went away and came back and applied again because he thought, you know, you're wrong. I've got it. Mm-hmm. I think it's not only our duty and the right thing to do to let them know that not only are they not qualified, but here's what you need to do. Here's what those skills are, and here's what you might want to do to make sure that you get those skills, and then come back and talk with us. Or we can put you in another position at another level and help you find the way to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So being very clear with our expectations, but also providing some support along the way.
Well, life teaches us that success comes incrementally. It usually doesn't come all at once.
Right.
As much as we're in an instant society and we've been spoiled with email and faxes and microwaves and all those things.
Trophies.
We still know that success comes as a result of doing certain things over a long period of time.
Right.
That's a good life lesson we all have to learn. The people who knock it out of the park at 23 years old are very rare. That's why we hear about them.
Exactly.
But usually success comes after years of making investments in certain kind of ways of living, business, and so on, and then success does show up.
Right. So the quote on the back of your book, and we've kind of talked around this a little bit, wisdom without passion is a Ferrari with no gas in the tank. I love that. Passion without wisdom is a tricked out 57 Chevy with no steering wheel. What examples have you seen that demonstrate this to be true? Where have you seen this in play?
There are people who have had long, let's just say, corporate experiences and think because of that, that they really have it all together. And a lot of those people have wisdom. And yet we see those people coming out of the workplace and realizing they really have no life beyond that. Worked with an executive recently who, after many years in a very visible company in a very highly paid position, ultimately, in essence, raised his head from the desk and realized he had no life outside of his work. And in leaving work, it was a terrifying experience. That's where we need passion mm-hmm. about things. It may be, you know, family, hobbies, other things that go along with wisdom to make a really balanced life, a life that we would consider successful. On the other hand, you know, passion without wisdom. Boy, passion without wisdom, you know, I say a tricked out 57 Chevy, no steering wheel. It can be dangerous. It can
be a train wreck about to happen.
Yes. And we see these younger people who are passionate, and they get these wonderful, wonderful, worthy humanitarian ideas where they're going to change the world, and all of a sudden they're going to, you know, put fresh water wells in every village in Africa. And so they create yet one more nonprofit. And then 6 months later, they're frustrated, they're angry at God and everybody they know because it didn't work. Well, they were passionate, but they had no wisdom attached to that at all. And a lot of times in the business place, what we see are kids coming in with passion and talent, but no economic model.
Mm-hmm.
It requires all three if you're going to do something worthwhile.
Right. I've heard it said that this generation, more than any others, have huge goals and no clue about the execution in many cases.
Well, that's exactly right.
So, great. Let's talk a little bit about communication now. We've heard a lot about how communication differs. The needs and expectations of different generations is different around communication. What might leaders do to try to meet the specific needs of all those different individuals they work with without making a career out of just coaching individual people all the time?
That's a big question because depending on the numbers of people involved, it is a challenge. And I tell leaders often that if they have even like 15 employees, they probably ought to expect to spend about 50% of their time managing. And a lot of times people who are the visionaries, the CEOs, don't want to do that. They want to just put things in place and disappear and hope things work well. You have to select what works well for you. Some leaders are more gregarious and are more social by nature. And if you're not, then you probably need to have people whose skills complement your own where they are doing those things. Because especially the younger generation today require an immense amount of time to lead them. It's not just hand-holding, but it's a sense that they're included. And they do require more pats on the back and affirmation.
Right. I heard a statistic the other day that for millennials, their sweet spot would be that 70% of the time they're in communication with their managers.
Yes. And for a lot of managers, that's a horrendous thought.
Well, and multiply that times the number of people you have. Yes, it is.
It's impossible.
It is impossible.
Yeah.
So somewhere there has to be a sweet spot in there. But I know with boomers, no news is good news. You know, we want to hear the expectation and just leave us alone to do it.
Mm-hmm.
With the Xers and the millennials, we like a little more, and with each of those generation, even more continuous communication. And as you said, a lot of affirmation that I'm doing the right thing,
mm-hmm.
a lot of praise when it's right. And I think that can be a slippery slope too, that we get into the habit of praising and maybe it's not right. So we have to be also willing to make corrections where needed.
Now, one of the challenges too is how we're seeing the splintering of work environments. I mean, in my company, I don't have anybody who comes to a certain place in the morning. Mm-hmm. Everybody does their work on their own. So they can be anywhere in the world. If they have proven an area of competence, we engage with them and allow them to do that. We affirm them, we reward them, we compensate them for that. But it's very unlike the old corporate structure where at 8 o'clock every morning everybody comes in the doors and they meet together.
Right.
So there can be a sense of being disconnected, and it requires unique skills to keep people engaged if there is distance,
mm-hmm.
literal geographic distance, which there more and more is. As companies realize, they can select talent because of the talent where geography is not a factor. I mean, if you have people come to an office, then you've got about a 10-mile radius of prospects that you're going to draw from. If you're really looking for talent, it can come from three states away or the other side of the world. And a lot of leaders are choosing to do that, where they really look for what is a person's contribution going to be, and they engage a person because of that. So it makes a very different kind of workplace. Personally, I love the kind of workplace that I have. We don't start off the morning with, you know, rah-rah meetings and sales meetings. I have a two-hour conference call with our team once a week, and that's it. That's all. There are people on our team who I have never met face-to-face.
Wow.
At all. Unlikely never will.
So are people free to call you if they have a question or if they need something from you? They can communicate with you one-on-one?
No. That's probably not the answer. No, they can't. The reason I am able to produce in areas that I consider priorities is because of my attention to focused, uninterrupted blocks of time. When we look at the common workplace today, we know, I mean, research tells us that if you respond to an email or you take a phone call or somebody walks into your office,
an interruption of any kind,
it takes about 18 minutes to get back to where you were previously. You know what? A lot of people never go 18 minutes in their workday without being interrupted in some way. So they never fully engage in a project. I think that's very counterproductive. Me personally, I work in 3 and 4 hour blocks. So no, to be honest with you, those people cannot. It has to wait until that defined period of time where they can ask me a question.
So how do you reconcile that with the millennial who wants to be in touch?
Not everybody is going to survive in the environment I just described at all. That has a pre-screening system in place because not everybody is going to like that.
Right. You're right.
Now, we can look at personality styles and all that, and we do that, but, and this is just not a matter of artificially segmenting people out, but they have to recognize the uniqueness in different work environments, and they ought to know as they're committing on the front end and what they're engaging in terms of being a leader, does it fit you?
Mm-hmm.
This is not something where you have to artificially force yourself to be a particular kind of leader. There's a lot of diversity in good leadership. And people can choose what is it that fits me well, both as a leader and as a participant or employee or whatever you want to call that.
Right. So just like we would look for a cultural fit in any other way, that's part of the cultural fit with your organization.
Very much so.
Every
company has that corporate culture. And even in the same environment, if we take Target and Kmart or Walmart, they're very different corporate cultures.
They are.
Although they're in the very much the same industry. So, and that's okay. Just like people have personalities, companies do as well.
Right. I know, Joe, that you've talked about take time to think, and that for him is the block of time that you're talking about that you might use to write or whatever, to get away by yourself and really think about the business. That's the only way that you can look down the way a bit. Wouldn't you say that, Joe?
Oh, I coach everybody, you know, once a month, once every couple of months, go somewhere, take a notepad with you and get rid of your phones and radios and kids and everything else and just sit there by yourself and close your eyes and think about the future of your business unit, think about your career, think about your family life. And I guarantee if you go away and do that somewhere where there's no other distraction and you close your eyes and do some real thinking, the odds are you're going to come up with some different approaches and some better approaches. You know, one of the things you were talking about before, I was thinking about the coaching that we do at Tractor Supply, and I would spend a large portion of my time on the road visiting stores, and also coaching district managers and buyers and whatnot in between stores. And I found that the younger people just ate that up. They wanted to hear the stories about successes and failures in the past and how you accomplished this and how that happened. And you know, when you think about the use of our time to develop the millennials and the younger folks, that's something that those younger folks just eat up and they take that with them. And as one of my friends say, you know, when you're old and gray, think about what you've accomplished in life. You're probably going to think more about the people you've developed than any of the individual material accomplishments you've made. But I think that our time as leaders spent explaining and talking about what's important and helping people develop their skills are probably the most important things we can be doing to develop teams.
I think you're right. Our next topic that we were going to talk about is motivation, and I think we've kind of hit on that a little bit as we've talked about communication, because communication is such a big part of motivating all the generations, getting it right, creating an environment, a nurturing environment. I'm a strong believer that you can't motivate me. You can create an environment that supports me to motivate myself. And so I think we have to kind of work hard to create that environment, and that may look a little different between the boomers and the Xers and the millennials. But we've hit on some of those points, the idea of a structured time as opposed to a blurring of time, that millennials are almost always mixing work and personal life. It's just life to them, as you said, Dan. A lot of interaction, a lot of feedback. And boomers don't really care for a whole lot of feedback, because if everything's going well, then I don't expect to hear from you. So any other thoughts about motivation in particular for those three groups?
We can't really just draw hard and fast lines between the different generations. Obviously, there are people who have characteristics of the millennials who are in their 60s and vice versa. So it's not just a blanket, this is the way that it is. I like that. I like the unpredictability. I was working on a project with a team that we have that are in Colorado, and I'm here in Tennessee, and they were apologizing to me because they said, really, this project is more art than science. And I said, oh, my gosh, I hope so. I said, I am not engaged in anything that is that predictable. I love the opportunity to be part of something that is not totally predictable. Were there going to be things that we have not anticipated in there? And I think that's just pretty indicative of the work environment that we have today. It's hard to really set down in concrete. This is the way we did it last year, so by golly, we're going to continue doing that. We continue to try and experiment and work with the changing generations as they come in, and we all learn in that process. We aren't trying to talk anybody into being something that they're not, but we have to understand these diversities that we have in the workplace today and just figure out how can we still be productive in spite of all these variations.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it comes down to it's a relationship business, and I have to know you, whether you're 60 or whether you're 27, to know what's going to motivate you and how I can best support that for you.
If we look at the selling process, and we're all selling. If you're a leader, you're selling. If you're a school teacher, you're selling. I mean, if you work in a retail store, you better be selling.
Right.
But when we look at the four different components that are involved in selling, I mean, 40% of the process is developing rapport and trust. If somebody doesn't trust you, they're not going to do what you ask or buy what you have. You can have $10 bills for $8, and they aren't going to buy.
Right.
They have to trust you. 30% is identifying the need of that person, and 20% is product knowledge or product presentation. 10% is what we call gaining commitment. So it's a very soft ending to having developed a relationship well. That can be done in a variety of ways. If it's done face-to-face, then so be it. If it's done by creating an environment where somebody feels valued and affirmed, where they can easily recognize what results are desired, if it's done through writing books, as I do, people still have to feel that. They have to feel like there's a rapport, a relationship, before they're going to buy into any of the principles that I may be writing about. But I think everybody needs to understand that. Sometimes we think, well, I'm just a warm body standing in this place, so people come in, they ought to buy what we have. No, you better be willing to engage in the relationship or there's not going to be a meaningful transaction.
Exactly. And there may be a transaction, but it'll be a one-time thing.
Right.
Exactly. So, having said all that we've said, there are probably some new rules that we can talk about, some things that generally apply to everyone in the workplace. And one is clear, straightforward language. No hidden messages, no hidden agendas. Joe, you talk about values all the time and letting people know, you know, from the get-go, what are the values of this organization? Because you need to know that if they're not your values, you're not going to be happy here. Do you want to say something about that?
I think it's important for all generations, but particularly for the young generations, to understand where the business is going, what the leaders believe in, what the value structure is, and then to be able to see the leaders, in fact, live out what they're talking about. And I think that for the boomers, you might say, you know, here are the rules and here are the values, and everybody marches to the beat of the right drummer. The younger folks, you need to talk to them about it, have to have conversations about it. And doing that makes you helps a rapport and it develops an understanding. And the more young people, or any people for that matter, understand where you're going and what's important to you, the more likely they are to get you there. Not necessarily they know all the details, but they understand the big picture. They understand the direction. They understand the value structure. They understand that you have no tolerance for a lack of ethics in your organization, that you have no tolerance for a lack of respect. If you talk about those things and practice them, people will tend to mimic your behavior.
Exactly. We're not assuming anything. We're not going to assume that you'll get it if I just give you a few hints. I have to be pretty specific about it. And I want to reinforce when I see it. I want to celebrate doing things right. I want to celebrate a good job so that you know that I know that's what you're doing and you know that I know it's what I'm expecting.
Sometimes as people are coming into the workplace for the first time, they experience, golly, rewards that are contingent upon good performance or good results for the very first time. But we have educational systems now that, you know, where everybody wins. Everybody gets a blue ribbon. You know, sports teams where everybody wins. Everybody gets a trophy. It's an unrealistic entrance into the workplace because it really doesn't work that way. And one of the things, and as much as we talk about all this affirmation and encouraging people and all that, I want to make clear that we aren't sanctioning incompetence. We still have to be very clear about, are you making a contribution that's expected or not? And if not, then you probably need to leave this organization. I mean, Mike Vance, one of the great old trainers, developed most of the training program for Disneyland, has a phrase, and he says, you know, never sanction incompetence. It demoralizes everyone else.
Exactly.
They see that they're being rewarded for incompetence or less than satisfactory performance. So setting standards high is a motivator. It's an intrinsic motivator that there is something worthwhile to be accomplished here. This is not just an opportunity to show up and get a paycheck.
Exactly.
There's a connection here that I'm part of something, and if I pull my weight, I do my part, contribute something meaningful, then I'm rewarded. That's something that I'm seeing a lot of workplaces deal with because the millennials coming in expect to get a paycheck even if they didn't do anything.
Exactly.
Even if they just wasted time, didn't do what they were asked. Well, I was here. Well, being here isn't enough.
Right.
And we can hold our head high about having high expectations for what's expected of our team members.
And we are not going to promote you just because you're still here 6 months later.
Mary, promoted out the door.
Yes. Yes.
Mary, you know, one of the things that we always say at Tractor Supply is if you're not happy, leave. We don't want you here.
If you have a
bad attitude, leave. And I think when as leaders you make that clear, you tend to rid yourself of some of the people who really don't belong there.
I think you're exactly right.
One of the things I think is very important in building a sense of confidence and sense of belonging is celebrating successes. And telling success stories is that's a surefire winner no matter where you are. At Tractor Supply, when a success took place in the store manager would write a story about it, a paragraph or two, pass it up the ladder, and that employee would get patted on the back, and the people in the store would feel wonderful, and other people would learn from the success story how to achieve the same kind of successes. And when those would get to me, when I was the CEO, I'd send back a smiley face attached to the email to the employee in the store who had that success. And well, I'll tell you, that really inspires people when when you're celebrating the things that you want to achieve, get more and more out of it, and everybody feels part of the organization.
You know, we were at TGI Fridays the other night eating dinner, and every once in a while we'd hear a bell ring. We were back in the bar, a bell ring, and I said, "Hey, what's up with that?" They said, "That's when somebody gets a really big tip." I thought, how cool was that?
I love that.
Ring a bell. Somebody provided service worthy of a big tip, and everybody in the whole place knows it instantly.
And how significant is it if it's the same person over and over?
Yeah.
Then there's something there. I wanted to just say the flip side of that, recognizing really good performance, is especially with millennials, it is so important to help coach them through their first failure. And I've heard this over and over and over. They've not been allowed to fail.
Mm-hmm.
They've had a safety net under them during school and in college, and then here they are in their first job, and it's gonna happen. So the very smartest managers can be prepared for that and know how to coach them through their first failure. It's not the end of the world. We've all been there. We've all made mistakes, and we've all come out on the other side. But it's even been suggested that that's one reason that people may leave an organization after being there a short while, because they figured, I made a mistake. I've never failed before. I must not belong here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we need to be prepared for that and ready to take action in that direction as well.
Well, that's certainly a big life principle. You don't get to success without failures along the way.
Right.
I mean, the basketball coach Rick Pitino says failure is a fertilizer for success. There's a lot of cliches about failure, but we have to view it differently. It's not the end of the world. It's part of the process.
Part of the world.
It's leading to something. And nobody has a straight linear line to success. There are ups and downs. And to the outside person, those may look like failure. Yeah, we can frame it within a company so we recognize that there was an attempt at something that didn't work, a lot of things, so it doesn't feel like failure.
Sure.
But where it is part of a legitimate learning process.
Exactly. Well, before we call for questions, I wanted to just have one last conversation, and that is to encourage people to talk about these issues, to just have conversations with your team. Bring in people of all generations. Talk about your differences and your similarities. Talk about what kind of things millennials and Xers are looking for from their bosses. What's the ideal inspirational boss? Because every time we talk about some of these things, we all learn something. We all realize that it isn't just boomers bending to millennials or millennials bending to Xers. We're all bending to each other. And the more we talk through some of the issues, the easier that becomes. So I think we want to encourage teams to have those conversations, talk about how people, what their ambitions are. If I don't know what your ambitions are, I can't help you get there. So helping people build their own development plans, talk about rewards and how and what's significant to me, because it may be different than what's significant to you. Just get those things out and talk about them. And, oh, by the way, have fun while we're there, because life's too short not to.
Absolutely. And this is a process that looks different in different environments. We've heard a lot recently about Steve Jobs' leadership style, and people recognize that he was belligerent and belittling, and yet he had a company that people would give their right arm to be a part of. Well, we scratch our head, like, what's up with that? He is not the kind of leader that we would hold up as a model necessarily, and yet he got a lot of things done in a very innovative environment. So there's room for diversity, and I don't think we can create just here is the perfect leader. It has to reflect so much about that person, the environment they created, the kind of work that they're choosing to do. So there's room for everybody to be great if, in fact, they've taken the time to look at themselves first and identify what is a good fit for me. I think there's been too much of people trying to artificially force themselves into emulating somebody else or being somebody else rather than being true to themselves. And we know that In writing Wisdom Meets Passion, we did a lot of research relative to older people who are arriving at older age and having neither wisdom nor passion, unfortunately. But the one thing when those people, and this goes way beyond my research alone, but the one thing that comes to the surface again and again and again as the biggest regret of people when they know they're facing death is this: I wish I'd had the courage to live a life authentic to myself rather than living out the expectations of others. Well, that has a lot of implication for the workplace. If people are doing if they're burying who they are and just trying to live up to the expectations of others, that's not a real good fit. That's not a good long-term solution, even though temporarily it may look like it's producing results. So we have to find what does motivate this person. What kind of environment does this person work well in? How does this person sell, relate to other people? And boy, that takes time. You know, and that's one thing we can't duplicate, we can't expand in any way. It's the one resource. We only have 168 hours a week. And as leaders, the challenge is constantly that tension between how do I make everything work, but how do I invest the time in the next generation, in the employees, in the team that I'm trying to build, and still accomplish what I need to do personally and have a personal life.
Exactly. It's a challenge.
It is, but an exciting one.
But an exciting one. Joe, any final words before we call for questions?
I think this is going to be a continuing challenge to all of us in leadership roles, understanding the younger generation and being able to lead them in a way that makes them effective. And I think the more we talk about it, the more we study it, the better we're going to get at it.
I think you're absolutely right. So what questions do you have out there?
Will this be available on recording later?
Yes, it is. It will be available from our website.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Mary. This is Kim Riley. I do have a question.
Okay.
Any thoughts or techniques on how to juggle being a baby boomer leader, trying to find time to give to that younger generation that you've brought on as employees, and also trying to balance the passion in your life that you still want to be engaged there? Any suggestions on how to balance all of that?
Be very intentional with your time. I mean, when we hear, the thing I hear from leaders more than anything else is, I just don't have the time. I hear that from people who want to author books, I just don't have the time. And H. Jackson Brown has this saying, and I don't want to just make it seem cliche, but he says, you know, we all have the same amount of time that Mother Teresa had, Billy Graham, Louis Pasteur, Michelangelo, and all that. I mean, we really do. We have 168 hours. But what I find a lot of times in people who are not accomplishing what they want to accomplish is they are not intentional in how they decide to use their time. Decide in advance how you're going to use that time, and then stay with those as priorities. If you allow interruptions trying to be nice, you'll regret it at the end of the day and that you didn't accomplish what you wanted to accomplish.
One of Covey's quotes is, it's easier to say no when there's a bigger yes inside. So if I've been intentional about what my yes is, it's easier to say no to other things.
Thank you both.
Welcome. What other question?
Hi, this
Mary.
This is Kevin Vaughn. Hi, Mary and Joe. How are y'all doing?
We're great. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan, for joining today. I'd like to hear Dan's comment on devices in the workplace and as we bring in that younger generation into the workforce and their need and want to have their devices. And I walk down the hall and I see earbuds in the ears and things of that nature. How do you, come around to accept and still promote productivity and so forth? Just any comments you got on that?
Yeah, you know, I used to cringe as a speaker when I look out in the audience and people are texting. You know, I'm thinking, why aren't they paying attention? You know, well, then they convince me that they're tweeting things out that I'm saying. It's hard to know what's going on in the mind of the younger generation with all their technology in place. But it's a way that they stay engaged. It's a way that they stay connected. And I don't know, we can't just eliminate it. For sure. I think there ought to be open conversations about it, though. You know, are they booking flights for the vacation next week, or are they really connecting in some way that relates to company time? a lot of people are stealing time from companies unfairly, and I think it's a major issue that we need to confront. When we really look at the studies, the amount of time that people are spending in just personal things, updating Facebook or just surfing the internet or getting their personal tweets is unconscionable. And I think we need to call people to a level of ethics that lets them know that is not acceptable. We expect them to be focused on the work there, not to be distracted with interruptions. But I think that has to be a corporate culture that's established. I don't think it's something that we can just make blanket rules on. There has to be an expectation that calls people to that level of excellence.
Dan, I have a little bit different approach to that. I think that wherever work is measurable, I think we need to measure people's, you know, what are you accomplishing? And if your goal is to sell 100 widgets in a day and you're selling 100 widgets in a day, you're accomplishing your goal. We pat you on the back. And if during that period of time you spent some time goofing off, who cares? On the other hand, you're somebody who's working like mad and only selling 80 widgets a day, we have a performance problem. And I think that as leaders, we need to focus on accomplishment and not – sometimes activities can get in the way of accomplishment. And I think that as leaders, the more we can measure performance and pat people on the back for doing a good job when they accomplish what they're accomplishing, they don't care what they're doing. I know that obviously when you're running a production line, you got to have people there on time. If you're running a switchboard, you have people on time. But so few jobs are that way today, we need to look at – the net accomplishment and measure from that point forward.
Well, in my business, I mean, I don't even see the people, so I don't know if they spend 6 hours a day doing something else, and you're right, in that environment, it doesn't matter because I'm not measuring anything but results. Now, a lot of companies are actually moving toward the ROWE environment, results-only work environment, where it doesn't matter if they come into the office or not, doesn't matter if they come in at 10 o'clock and leave at 3 because little boys playing soccer. I mean, if a company is really open to that kind of environment, then nothing is being measured but results. But there are still companies that have positions that are more administrative where it seems to be a dilution of the person's contribution if they're spending a significant amount of time on personal activities and technology.
And sometimes that has to do with attention. It's hard for me to put my attention on creating the results if it's scattered. Mm-hmm. So there's something there as well. We have an online question. Have you found the younger generation leaders unwilling to hire baby boomer contributors?
No, not really. They seem to be more open to the diversity of age because they really are attuned to who's going to produce, who's going to contribute. And I hear from people, you know, every day, nobody's going to hire a 53-year-old. I say, you're nuts. That's an artificial obstacle. Everybody has something that seems to be an obstacle. I'm too young. I'm too old. I don't have the right degree. I don't have any degree. I'm the wrong color. Everybody has that, and for the most part, it exists between our own two ears because in the workplace today, it's so wide open to people who know what they can bring as value to an organization.
Well, with inclusion being one of their most important characteristics,
that's right.
Why would they exclude anyone?
But there's a company very close to where we're talking from here today that is largely millennials, but they have about half a dozen people in their 60s and 70s who are amazing contributors in that organization. But no, I find the younger generation is probably more open to bringing on baby boomers who can clearly contribute than vice versa.
I think that I saw in my experience a lot of times where the 25 or 30-year-olds wouldn't exactly know how to manage somebody who's old enough to be their father or mother. And we used to spend some time coaching them through that to help them feel more comfortable in that relationship.
Excellent. Other questions?
Hi. Hello?
Hello, we're here.
A little static in the line, but go ahead.
This is Lynette Sherman. I facilitated a youth summit a few years ago. One of the primary things that these young people said was that we're not taught the consequences of our behavior. For example, some of them didn't know what makes you a felon if something is found in your car, which is a lifelong implication. How can those of us who occasionally work with young people in preparing them for the workplace help them to understand the consequences of their behavior? They understand about rewards and they understand about paychecks, but they don't seem to understand what are the consequences for not being prepared to do this. Does that make sense?
Are you talking about in terms of personal preparation or just productivity once they're in a position?
Professional preparation. I created a class just because students couldn't make decisions and didn't have a maturity level, and I find that thread goes all the way through, even sometimes within the work environment when I'm coaching.
Yeah, well, that's a real hot spot for me, and I'm not sure if you're going here entirely, but the fact that we are teaching kids information and knowledge, but it's not wisdom, but information, and they have their head full of facts, but they don't know how to give a firm handshake and look somebody in the eye. I mean, just the personal skills that people are lacking coming into the workplace are a big deterrent to there being meaningful contributions there. I think they do have to know the consequences of that, to be confronted with the reality of that, what they need to do to continue more meaningful preparation. And ultimately, they need to be accountable for either they're making a worthy contribution or they're not. And if they're not, then we really don't need them as part of the team.
And once they join the team, they're always representing the team. Even if they're not on the job, their behavior can be a reflection on what's happening to the organization.
Yeah, now there we get into the things that are posted on Facebook about weekend activities
exactly.
And all that.
Exactly.
You have to realize, their lives are pretty transparent. At this point, a lot of companies these days, rather than looking at the fine print on the resume, they simply Google a person. They want to know what kind of presence does this person have, what kind of reputation does this person have, and it's pretty easy to find out about somebody. Now, and if there's nothing there, I work with seasoned executives, and I turn around and Google, and there's nothing there, and I'm like, you're non-existent. Why would a company want you? You have no existence beyond what you have on a piece of paper here. So we have to realize, we're engaged in more than just company performance.
Exactly. Did that answer your question?
That's helpful. It sheds light on it, yes.
Okay, thank you. One more question.
Mary, good afternoon. Jim Schindley, how are you?
Good.
Good. I've got just a real fast comment about something that Joe said and then a question. I've been fortunate enough to be a recipient of one of Joe's smiley faces, and for probably the 3 seconds that it took him to send that, it does send a tremendous amount of joy and honor to the individual that receives that. So certainly the one-minute prayer is definitely worth the time and effort, and thank you, Joe, for that. The question is, as Xers and Millennials, being an open and collaborative type of generation, as they start to transition and mature, do we expect any differences from them in the workplace? And then what potentially do we see from the next generation?
I don't think this generation is going to change. I don't think this is a matter of maturity. I think it's a different time and culture that we're in. There have been so many factors that have gone into creating what we're seeing in the millennials today. So I don't think it's going to change dramatically. I think they're going to change the workplace as they move through it, just like the baby boomers. Have been described as a pig in a python, that bulge that moves through a snake. The baby boomers have been described as such, where they created industries at every age. When they were babies, we had Pampers, disposable diapers, instant baby food and all that, and now we're seeing this explosion of retirement centers and nursing homes because it's still addressing the needs of them. The millennials coming in are going to create their own specific phenomenon as they move through, and I don't think we're going to see a lot of change in that.
As far as the next generation, which some are already calling the Generation Z, I think it will be what will define them is whatever happens now, whatever is the next thing that comes along. We talk about digital natives who are the Xers and the Yers, and the digital transients who are the boomers and the veterans, and what a difference that has made being born into it and having to learn it. And I think as communication and all other digital services expand, we can't even imagine what it will be like.
Yeah, we can't, and we just have to be open to it. We have
right.
to realize, I mean, Peter Drucker said before his death, you know, if you're doing things the same way today you were doing them 1 year ago, you're probably falling behind.
Exactly.
This is not a matter of just figuring it out and then we're going to do it right for the rest of our lives. This is a matter of continuing relentless change, and I think it's exciting. Mary, I kind of cringed a little bit when you said the next generation is Generation Z. If it's Z, what comes
what's
after
next?
That?
What's I don't next? Know. Double
gosh.
A. Who knows?
The calendar is right.
Thank you all so much for joining us. We appreciate your attendance and your attention. Our next call will be September 19th, and we'll feature Jeffrey Smart, who wrote Who. Copies or recordings of this call are available at our website, www.scarletleadership.com. And we thank you so much.
Mary, can I have a few words?
Yes, and then I'd like to say a few more words about Dan's book. Go ahead.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I want to push Dan's book a little bit. Wisdom Meets Passion, When Generations Collide and Collaborate, just came out, and I'm only about 20 pages into it, but it's really a great read. I also want a little asterisk here. I kept saying, when I talk about Tractor Supply, I said we used to. It's we used to because I used to work there, but most of the practices are still in place, and if you've worked there the past 30 years, you would know that the value structure has been consistent the whole time. And Jim Schindley, go check your email.
Dan,
right.
We are really excited about your book, and I'm guessing it's available on Amazon and all the other usual places?
It is.
Okay.
Yes, everywhere.
Great. Well, good luck with it. We're excited to follow your success.
Thank you so much.
And thank all of you.